Well, our tech guru, Jesse Feiler, joins us for the final time in calendar year 2016. Don't worry, he'll be back here in calendar 2017. But I think this marks, what, 16 years we've been doing this? We've been a long time. So.
I think it's something like that.
Yeah, so, well, it's, we love having you here.
We may get it right.
Just figure we
may
keep
take
on
another
doing
16.
It. Well, I'm in for the challenge if you are. Jesse Feiler helps people and organizations get to know and use new technologies. His most recent books are Learn About HomeKit on iOS and iPad for Seniors for Dummies, which I think I need to get for a certain member of my family this holiday season. Current projects include Utility Smart to manage use of utility resources with Kurt Gervich at SUNY Plattsburgh Risk Management for Nonprofits. This morning, we're going to talk about code. We're going to talk about what that is, what programming language is, and why that should matter to us. And shouldn't we, you know, sort of like a takeout restaurant, you know, just let somebody else do it and we... We use what they build, right? Well, Jesse Feiler, it's always wonderful to have you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
All right. So we are talking about code, and I will ask you the most naive question that I completely do not know the answer to, but what is code?
Code are the instructions. Code is the instructions that make a computer do what you want it to do.
Okay.
That's it's in the olden days, long, long ago, like in the 40s, computers were first constructed and wires and cables went from one place to another. There were switches that people manipulated to make the computer do stuff. And then fast forward to like this morning, the switches and the cables and so forth were turned into transistors and instructions that we could type into a language that is almost human readable. And so that's what makes the computers run.
So if you have a button, say you get to a point on a button where it's, or get to a point on a web page where you're doing something and then it says submit, and then you press that button. So it's the code that says that the information that you just put in is going to be submitted to whoever you're submitting it to, and then that will go where it needs to be.
But that's just part of it.
All right.
The button got there with code that drew the button.
Right. The button got there by everything that's on that screen got there.
With code. And yes, you push, tap the button, and what happens there is code.
Okay. So why, and maybe this isn't what you're calling for, I don't know, but why do we need to know about that?
We wouldn't really need to know about that if we had every app in the world that we will ever need, if we had every computer doing everything that we want a computer to do in the world, we wouldn't need to worry about it. But we don't.
We don't?
We need more code.
Okay. All right. So, but I thought that I don't want to take your job away. I thought that's what you did.
I brought with me on a dead tree.
Yes.
A statistic. This is from a press release from Congress, so it must be right.
Of course.
Actually, this is from Congressman Seth Moulton, Democrat of Massachusetts. It's from the press release about the Congressional Internet. App challenge. The quote is, "We are currently on track to reach 1 million unfilled programming jobs by 2020.
Really?
That's why you care.
Okay.
Because
now we do care.
Yes, you're not taking my job away. I just can't do it all.
That's right. Although, God, I wish you could. So I feel like we're in much better hands. So what we're saying is that we as a society, we as a culture, need this to be something on our, if we are going to continue the way that we're going, which is...
Or better.
And I guess I meant on a technological road to the future, then we need these code writers to be able to keep up with where we're headed.
And where are they coming from?
Now, let me ask you a somewhat of a philosophical question, but and I guess somewhat historical as well, and that is, haven't we been better at coming up with bells and whistles and new stuff than we have with the actual thing that, in other words, you have this technological product that can do 350 things, but actually you'll probably only use about 13 of them. And the reason is because the others, we just don't have a lot to do with and they aren't fully thought out.
We may not know how to use them. They may not be fully thought out. We may not care about them.
Yes.
But that's true of many, many things. Of the... Let me not talk... I'm specifically not talking about WAMC.
Yes.
But a radio station that broadcasts 24 hours a day, 365 days a year.
Yes.
Unless you are a relative or an employee... Will you care? You're just a listener?
Mm-hmm.
Not just a listener. Not just
a
listener.
No, I know.
Very few people are going to listen to and be interested in 365 days, 24 hours a day, every single thing that comes out of that radio station.
Right.
So the fact that there are a lot of apps that you don't care about really is like newspapers, like also there's lots of food you don't care about.
Right.
You know, we...
I'm looking at the sweater you're wearing, and I'm thinking, well, even if it had an inside pocket, well, you may or may not use the inside pocket, but the sweater's still lovely.
Thank you. And and it's there in case I need it.
Right.
So yeah, is the ratio of use of useful apps to, for you, to apps that you don't care about too hot? Maybe, but if you need a certain app, you should have it, if you can.
So to write the code, you need a language.
Yes.
So there are many languages out there, correct?
Yes.
So what programming languages matter in the grand scheme of things?
Okay, that changes. That changes. That's not what matters.
Okay.
If I may.
What does matter?
Well, can I talk about the challenge?
Yeah.
Because one of the things that's happening now is one of the ways we're getting people involved with coding is we're teaching kids starting from the earliest grades, pre-grades, pre-readers, kids who can't even read yet, are starting to learn how to code. And this is part of the big initiative to get more diversity into the world of coders so that if we have diversity in the world of coders, we should have diversity in the code that is produced. That's the scheme of things.
Okay.
So that's one of the ways we're going about it. But one of the other things that's happening is there are things, community projects involving code, like you've heard of hackathons.
Yes.
Where people get together and write code together. We have contests and challenges where people write code and you can see what people are doing. And that helps people understand not the specifics of a programming language, but what they can do with code. And I think that's one way of moving forward. And the challenge that I mentioned is something I just was involved with. It's something that Congress has done. Each, for the representatives who want to participate, and not all of them can, because they just don't have enough time, or other things come up, there's a contest, and school kids, I think grades 8 through 12, can write apps. And they're judged at the regional level to find the best app for each congressional district. And you can go, there are links online to it. You can look at the apps. They produce a video, like a 3-minute video of what they've done. Mm-hmm. And you can see the apps that are written by kids in school, in middle and high school. See what they're doing. And what I think is one of the most important things about this, when I hadn't heard about it until I was asked to judge one, is you can see what kids are doing now and see what's out there. And if you are a kid or a teacher asking the question of what can kids do to write code, what language should I learn? What language should we teach? You can look at what people are doing. And it's sort of mind-boggling what's happening.
So at the risk of getting off topic, I do have to ask this question. That when I was a college student, so this is in the late 80s,
mm-hmm.
And I remember taking computer classes in which I was taught, I believe, DOS. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that sound right in the mm-hmm. in the time mm-hmm. frame continuum, whatever? And it was I remember these huge notebooks and the thing, and you'd sat there for hours. And okay. With no disrespect to my alma mater, that really didn't do me any good at all. But because we moved so quickly, so I'm just asking the question of what is the time when we talk about this education? How do we make sure that it is still? Because I remember doing it in high school as well. How do we make sure that because this is all changing so quickly that we keep up with it, and that what we were taught, say, in 1988 or 1989 is still applicable when you actually graduate and need a job?
Well, my interpretation of this, and this is just yes. my interpretation of what I'm seeing,
yes,
but it's right, I think.
I have no doubt.
We don't teach programming languages. That's not the secret.
Okay.
The secret is teaching logic and programming. And there's a couple of initiatives, and there are links to them on the website people can see. And one of the ones that I have done a lot of work with is Apple's Playgrounds. And it's a way of teaching kids in very early grades how to write a program. And you see a maze, and you have a game player, and you have to move the player through the maze. That's your task. And you break it down, and the programming isn't writing the code to, say, move the character here. It's to do the higher level thing and say, to get from where I am in the maze to the exit, I have to go forward, turn right, and then move forward again. Something like that.
Right.
That's not a programming language. That's logic. To get from here to there when there are walls and barriers means I have to be able to go forward, turn, and go forward. And then if you want to make it more complicated, I have to be able to go back. I have to, you know, all of those things. If you break down the problem to those steps, then you can write the code in any language that moves the game piece forward or turns it around. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's the logic to it. That's what we have to teach, the way to do things.
And then how do people get jobs from that?
One, look at the apps that were done for the Congressional App Challenge when you look at them. I would say that I looked at all the ones for New York 21, of course, but I looked at a number of them, the winners from the other congressional districts. I'd say a significant number of them are ready, if not to be sold commercially, are ready to be submitted as a job application. So that's how you get a job.
All right.
We're teaching people how to write resumes. But in certain fields, like software development, it doesn't matter what's on your resume. It really doesn't. What matters is you can go in and you can say, here's my resume. You know, I have all these recommendations, all of this stuff. Or you can say, here's my app. That's right. How I think. That's what I did. And that's true of many other things, not just app writing, but certainly that's how you get a job with an app, is you build an app.
And, this is, I think, an important question, but maybe not the question I should be asking, which is, are these good jobs? Do they pay well? Are they good jobs?
Software developer, all sorts of levels, yes. Software developers tend to make a good deal of money. And some of them are actual jobs, you know, in terms of, you know, weekly jobs. A lot of jobs are contract work. There are also independent developers like I am. Many of us do things where some people do app development in addition to some other job that they consider a real job. Some of us sort of blur the lines. I do app development and consulting for organizations because I think the two of those fit together in the way I want to work. I'm also very happy not working in an office, you know, 40 hours a week.
Right.
I work at home for 60 hours a week.
And so what do you see, and we just have less than a minute, but what do you see changing? And do you see us getting on the ball here in the next year or so?
I think more and more people are aware of it. More and more people are talking about teaching code and learning code and more things that happen publicly where we can see. There are even wonderful meetup things where people can go and work at building code together, not classes, building code, and many of them welcome absolute beginners. And absolute beginners in terms of coding turn out to be, in many cases, people who are web designers. And they want to move beyond what they call front-end web development to the back-end or to writing code.
Well, it's all good stuff. That's very, very hopeful. That's nice, right?
Yeah, it's the time of year to be hopeful.
Yes, I like it. Jesse Feiler provides consulting services to small businesses and nonprofits. His website is northcountryconsulting.com, where you have information up about this very subject.
Yes.
On the website, it's northcountryconsulting.com. Jesse Feiler, have a beautiful holiday season, and thank you so much for being with us. It's always
Same
a pleasure.
You.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.